The VGRT Gaming Podcast, episode 587, recorded on September 15th, 2020.
The 587th edition of the TD Gaming Podcast and 420th episode of Video Game Roundtable. I am TJ Denzer.
I am Scott Dirk.
And I am Jonah Powell.
The VGRT Gaming Podcast focuses on game news from around the industry.
Yes, there's a little 420 there too.
I really had to resist the urge to say nice.
Well, we know what you're doing anyway. So, there's no gaming flashback. I'm just too tired and I don't want to deal with it. I more or less finished Spiritfarer.
Y'all's?
It's okay. I mean, here's the thing. The story is great, but the platforming is just average and annoying at times. This game was not meant to be a platformer. It just has platforming in it. So when you have to do platforming, it's like, oh.
Yeah.
On the other hand, you know, I got all the spirits that can be spirited away. And, some of them were really sad. Some of them were just goofy. But I think that's the point.
Yeah.
One spirit never goes away. And I think the reason for that is that he has to be there for when you decide you want to continue playing. You know, you can continue and get back on the ship. And just continue to do quests. Not that there's many of them, but, you know, there's completionist stuff.
Mm.
And the funny thing is the guy who stays around is a nerd who loves role-playing with dice. And every time he talks to you, sometimes you'll hear him rolling a dice and say, "You rolled a 13!
That's funny.
I also started playing Tell Me Why. It's an adventure game by Don't Nod. And I have one little criticism about it.
Mm-hmm.
When you open your game with a... We made this game by talking to all these professionals about transgenderism and, you know, this and that. And I'm saying, okay, you're giving away one of the plot twists right now. You're telling me that one of the characters is going to be transgender, and lo and behold, one of them was. Now, I will say this, though. It isn't often that you have FTMs in a video game, which is female-to-male transgender. Usually it's, you know, trans women who are in it, but no, it's a trans man this time. And apparently she's also pre-op because at one point he says he's tired of, he can't wait to get top surgery, he can't wait to stop having to strap these things down.
So. Mm-hmm.
The dialogue is pure Don't Nod. And if you've played Life is Strange and there are other games, you know the kind of dialogue I'm talking about. It's just a little too on the nose, and it feels a little too much like 30-year-olds writing about 20-year-olds. Which I will say is better than 50-year-olds writing about 20-year-olds, but you can still see that they're kind of talking a little too old for the way they should be talking. And they're French. I mean, it's very Frenchy talk, too. The characters are not French. They're Alaskan, but...
Yeah.
The entire game revolves around the fact that these are the Corsican siblings, in which they can hear each other's thoughts and they can see each other's memories. There's not many puzzles, except for when you have to get evidence to present to people to show them, we know you're lying, here's our proof. So it's basically L.A. Noire in that respect. Except you don't scream at them when you're being the bad cop.
Mm-hmm.
Don't you find that funny in L.A. Noire? Oh, I'm going to doubt her. You're lying! I know you're lying! It's like he's going to pick up the chair and smack him across the head with it.
You piece of butter! Yeah, it is. It is intense when you doubt in that game.
I mean, what's it called? I think Yahtzee put it correctly. He said that when you do the doubtful, it sounds like you're accusing them of being Hitler. Which is, you know, it does take place in the 40s, so. Anyway. So, yeah, I mean, the graphics are great. And, you know, even. And there's another game that's come to Xbox Game Pass for PC. And I wonder what Scott is going to think, because I may have to try it, and that's Disgaea 4.
Oh, yes.
I never played Disgaea 1 through 3, so if I play 4, it'll be coming in cold.
I haven't played this series, but I've seen it. I've heard about it.
Really? You haven't played Disgaea?
Yeah. No, I haven't. I can't remember what it was originally on. But,
it was originally on the NES. No, wait. I know it was actually on the PC very early, though. It was like East, you know? It was like one of the early PC games on...
Yeah.
So, let's see. Yeah, it was originally on Japanese PC.
Yeah, I've played the first two games. After that,
it was first on the PS2. And then the PS... Yeah, it was first on the PS2.
Yes. And I like them. They're pretty good turn-based RPGs, strategy RPGs. But they're also super grindy. Like,
I wonder if that's why they're going with Disgaea 4 first? Because the one they're really releasing is Disgaea 4 Complete Plus.
Mm-hmm. Well, the Disgaea games have always had a couple mechanics that make them, on one end, very grindy, and on the other end, just like makes everything completely trivial for how much you can power up characters. Like, you can do absurd things to just like make, to like break the game and make your characters OP. And it has to do with like combo attacks and also like leveling up items. For those who don't know, items have worlds inside them, and the way that you power up the items is by going into those worlds and kill it and leveling them up by winning battles inside of them. So it artificially extends the game ridiculously, but also. But also, it's an interesting way to go about like powering up your equipment. Yeah.
So, Complete Plus was actually released just this year. So, but I mean, it looks just like a PS2 game, except really high res and better textures.
Yeah, it looks nice. But like I said, I hadn't played it. I hadn't played the game.
It's on PS4 and Switch too. So, anyway, those are the games that I've been playing. So, TJ, what have you been playing? Oh wait, have you been playing more of Wasteland 3? Is the question.
I have been playing Wasteland 3.
I have not, but not because I don't want to. It's just that I have all these other things that are on my plate.
I haven't gotten too much further. I just got. Basically to the nightclub owner.
Okay, I haven't even gotten that far.
But at the same time, like I have been saving that game to play with Sam, and we've both been working a lot this last week, so I just haven't gotten to it very much.
Wait, which platform are you playing it on?
PS4.
Okay.
But I have been playing the heck out of Tony Hawk. Tony Hawk's Pro Skater 1
Plus
2.
Yeah, you said that last week.
I love that game. It is so good. It is incredibly good. Like, I played the original games, and, like, it's, on one hand, it's, like, so fun rediscovering the muscle memory that made those games work and made a person feel like they were good at those games back in the day. It's also, like, just great to see what kind of improvements they made upon it. Like, the music is great. The new editions are great alongside the old music, which they brought back everything. The skaters are fun, and the creative skater mode is really fun. I made a monster. And oh my gosh, the levels are pretty great too, except for the ones that are horrible because they were horrible the way they were originally made. Fuck Downhill Jam, and everything else is good. But yeah, other than that, let's see. I've been playing a few indie demos this week because it's PAX Online week.
Yeah.
They have a whole bunch of new stuff up on Steam that's basically like a Steam Summerfest, but like for PAX Online. One of the ones that I played today that was really, 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 really good was Crown Trick. And this is from Crown Trick.
I don't know that one.
So this is from Next Games, and it's published by Team 17. Or Next Studio, and it's published by Team 17. It's you play as like this little girl who has a sentient crown that sort of directs her to go into this dungeon and take on this world of nightmares. And it's a procedure. Yeah, it's a procedurally generated maze of levels that like you have to fight your way through and make it to a boss, and you collect weapons.
Crown has a big ol' eyeball on it.
Yes.
With an eyebrow, with a single unibrow.
It's got a really good art style too. It's a charming art style. But yeah, you collect all sorts of weapons and relics and items that can power you up along the way. It's kind of a roulette because there's a bunch of items you can get. Like
there's
I started
a little
out
roulette in this game.
Oh yeah, there is. I started out a run with a crystal rifle that could that if I casted a spell, it would make the rifle do bonus damage. But later on, I switched to a pair of swords that one was fire and one was ice. And if I stunned an enemy with them, like it would alternate between the fire attack and the ice attack. And if I stunned an enemy with them with anything and then hit them, it would do both damage at the same time. So yeah, real interesting setup. Oh, and I almost forgot the most important part. It's like slightly turn-based.
Yeah,
every
it has a grid on it.
Uh-huh. Every move is a turn, and so like some enemies cast spells that will put like a marker on the ground with a number under it, and you have to make a decision as to whether you can kill them in that move or you can escape their spell. And the only thing that like can get you out of harm's way if you don't have enough time to move is you have a blink ability that can be used 3 times per level. And so it's kind of like there's quite a layer of strategy to it. It was quite in depth and fun for just like being a demo.
Have you seen their next game, Metal Revolution?
I have not.
Okay. It's basically a brawler. Or maybe a fighting game, I can't tell which, with robots. Looks like it's a fighting game with robots. A 3D fighting game.
Huh. No, I haven't seen this before.
Yeah, and all their games have a Japanese translation, so I guess they're a Japanese company?
They are a, I believe, Chinese company.
Okay.
Yes, because they are in affiliation with Tencent.
Oh, okay. But this was published by Team 17.
Yes.
Okay. So, what other demos have you been trying?
I gave Agro Crabs Going Under a try, which is basically like another procedurally generated dungeon crawler, but with like the mock-up for it is a failed tech startup. You're battling through a dungeon of failed office startups or failed tech startup offices. So you fight a bunch of basically white-collar goblins with office equipment.
That's an interesting concept.
It's kind of fun picking up an office chair and just breaking it over someone's face. You can
isn't
literally
that what
pick
you
up
do in, isn't that your basic mode of discourse in Yakuza?
Kind of. So yeah, you can. There's so many different items in a given room that you can interact with and just pick up, and every one of them can be used as weapons. From office chairs and cactuses to skulls and spears.
Have you played any of the Jason Bourne game?
I have not.
Okay, it's a game. It's a third-person brawler, but it supplements it with environmental stuff. So you can take people and smash them into an outlet or do whatever, you know. So everything in the rooms have objects, and if you press the right way, you'll make them interact with those objects violently.
I think I remember that, but I never played it myself.
I did. Gamefly is a great service when during those days. How about you, Scott? Yeah. What have you been playing?
I've been playing some more Octopath Traveler and Suikoden 2, continuing my replay of that. I might actually do a Clive run after I finish playing Suikoden 2, which basically means that I have to rush the beginning and part of the mid-game to reach a certain destination by a certain time so I can complete a side quest. Because in the game, there's this character named Clive who's chasing down a rogue runaway who's, you know, I think stolen weapons from his guild and I think murdered somebody to do it. And they're like taunting him, saying, "You have a week to get to this location, otherwise I'm out of here." And that translates to a certain amount of hours of playing the game. But you have to rush through most of the story to get to this location to see their quest, I guess, finish. That's, you know, something interesting to do, a challenge.
Okay. So we're going to move on to game news. And first thing we're going to talk about is Ubisoft Forward, which was this past week on the 10th, I believe, 5 days ago. TJ, did you cover it?
I did.
Okay. So let's just ignore the expansions. I don't think anybody really cares about the new season of Siege or the new content that's coming to the Division 2. First, let's talk about Far Cry VR, which is an interesting concept. So Far Cry VR is basically going to be a bunch of spaces around the United States in which you get to strap on VR helmets and do basically, laser tag, but with VR helmets, you know, with placing you in various places in Far Cry.
So yeah, zero latency VR, which is like the locations they're talking about, has been around for a minute. They're basically a VR arcade. They've done a few things before, such as they have a few different scenarios they've done before. Far Cry, as far as I can tell, is like their first licensed scenario. And they're doing it set to Far Cry 3. So basically up to 8 players can engage in sort of a scenario that's based on Far Cry 3, which is pretty cool. Like that, I mean, that was probably one of the highlights of the series for a lot of people. I don't know. I don't know of any of these locations. I haven't seen one before, but it looks like a lot of them are in Australia and England.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure it's going to expand from there.
There are actually a few in the United States. There's Dallas, Houston, Las Vegas, and a bunch of other places I've never heard of.
Yeah, they're going to have 30-minute sessions for 1 to 8 players. I've done that sort of thing with one player in a carnival, and it's not much fun unless you have a bunch of other people playing.
Mm-hmm.
The difference is that you're going to actually be running around in this virtual environment. It's not going to be you're going to be sitting in front of a monitor with a VR headset on. No. You're going to be running around like you're in laser tag shooting people, so you can actually physically interact with other people.
Yeah, and like they've got these – it's like pretty large spaces that they have set up for basically these amusements. It's neat. It's a neat idea. I don't know. I think as far as like the games went from Ubisoft 4, there are a few other more interesting things. This is something that like you can't really do unless you're near one of these locations, which it doesn't look like there are many yet.
Well,
there's,
I mean, you have Dallas, Las Vegas, Houston, Scottsdale, Rancho Cucamonga, Reno, Orlando. I can easily see it in Reno and Las Vegas, in which you give the kiddywinks some time to play there while you go to the slots.
Mm-hmm.
The MGM Grand Casino.
Yeah.
But it's interesting. You just really, you know, I can see this, if it gets popular, going to actual amusement parks like a Six Flags. Anyway.
Yeah, I could see that too. Like it's a very interesting use of VR technology. And I mean, VR is getting pretty good. Like it's been getting pretty good for a while, but like this has been an incredible year for it, with Half-Life Alyx having come out.
And that other game that came before it, I forgot the name of it. Bone? No. You know the game I'm talking about, the one in which you actually have to it's a gun game, you know.
Yes, I do know what you're talking about. I'm trying to remember what the name of it is.
Yeah, what's it called? Yeah, if you want to reload, you actually have to reload, and you have to pull it out of your holster before you can shoot, you know.
Boneworks, right?
Boneworks,
I think.
That's right. I knew it began with bone.
Yeah, so that, for everything that I've heard, I'm sorry, The Walking Dead Saints and Sinners, people have told me that that's a pretty good one. I've seen it in action, and it doesn't look bad at all. We also are getting a Medal of Honor VR game, which doesn't look half bad. So yeah, it's been a great year for VR, and like this looks like a decent like group effort into it, because like there isn't too many, you can't really say that there are many things like a co-op VR experience right now, because for the most part it's been like a solo experience.
I mean, and also, you know, this sort of experience was done with stuff like laser tag and paintball and stuff like that. So it'll be, here's the thing that I was thinking about. I would like to see Far Cry AR, in which the game does something like Blood Dragon, and it transforms your actual surroundings into a VR landscape. So you go to a park and play virtual, you know. But I think that might cause a few problems with people who may not want to deal with you.
Yeah.
Anyways, we're going to move on, and we're going to talk about the game that's been most talked about coming out of Ubisoft 4, and that's Immortals Fenyx Rising. It is a dramatic story about Marcus Fenyx coming back to life, as a new sequel to the Gears of War series.
That would be tremendously awful.
That was horrible trolling. Never do that again.
But it is a spinoff of Assassin's Creed, which is weird enough.
Is it really? I didn't know.
Yes. There was an article that had released, I guess today or maybe yesterday.
A couple of days ago.
The creator was talking about how during Assassin's Creed Odyssey, there was a glitch where I guess a Cyclops was part of the crew, and they thought, you know, we should explore more of this mythology, a game based around this mythology, and that led to Immortals Fenyx Rising, where you're this character, Fenyx, who you can customize to, I don't know if it's male and female choice, but you can definitely male, customize your avatar to look the way you want it to look.
Basically, it's Pit.
Yeah, we're getting the Kid Icarus game that we all wanted. you have various weapons, which, as far as I can tell, don't break down. You can use, there's a hammer, an axe, and spear, and you get wings to help you fly or glide at different points. You have a lot of puzzles to solve. You're fighting all sorts of mythical monsters, and you're going to different regions. Each region is represented a deity that's been, I guess, captured or is in trouble, and you need to help them. So it's kind of the opposite of God of War.
Yeah, it looks very Breath of the Wild, though. It has the same it has the same fantasy look to it. Very green, very blue skied. But with a lot more statues than there is in Zelda.
Yeah. It does have a very soft look, and there's they even mentioned over the top fighting. There's a point where you just like get this giant hammer and you're whacking an enemy with it. So it's a little.
Here's the thing. You know, it's nice when you have some games that just have a really bright color palette.
Yeah.
Because too many games are just muted or just
grim.
Yeah, it's just real as brown, that sort of thing. This one has yellows and greens and purples and blues. It's just very bright, and it really does separate, you know, so that not everything looks the same.
Mm-hmm.
It's actually going to be a Stadia game, too.
Yeah, Stadia, I think it's coming to Epic.
Play an Epic Game Store.
Yeah.
It's also going to be on PlayStation 5 and Xbox Series X, so there's a... And it might, I'm not sure, be on Game Pass. I'm not entirely sure.
Yeah, we talked about it a little bit already, but, like, it does feel like Ubisoft's take on Breath of the Wild, but, like, when Ubi copies other people, they don't
do it better. I mean... Look, Ubisoft saw Mario and said, we can do this better. And you know what? They did. Rayman is a lot better game than Mario is. Not as popular, but still a better game.
I don't know if I'd go that far. I'd say it's a very good game. I would say it's an extremely good game.
Come on, the 2D Rayman kicks Super Mario's ass.
I wouldn't say kicks its ass. I would say it's good in its own way. It's very, very good, and I love the music levels.
The music is gorgeous.
Are you talking about the music levels in which you have to deal with these music notes?
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
But I also think the soundtrack is very...
The soundtrack is really good. The mouth harp song is really, really fun, and I actually have that in my YouTube playlist to listen to while I work.
And here's the thing, speaking of that, you know what game wasn't at Ubisoft Forward, which people raised their eyebrows about?
What's
Beyond Good and Evil 2 was not at Ubisoft Forward.
Oh, that's right. That game is never coming out, so make peace with that.
I'm at peace with it because the gameplay they showed from E3 a few years ago was just so off-putting.
Yeah, it was very... You know, it's not a game that I wouldn't play, like, if they fleshed it out and fiddled with it, because the world...
It seemed like Beyond Good and Evil. It would seem like we're playing a different game, just with furries.
It would absolutely seem like a different game than Beyond Good and Evil, I agree. It looks so vastly different from what Beyond Good and Evil 1 was that I don't even think that you could put the two next to each other and say, oh, yeah, that's from the same universe.
It's the Further Adventures of Paige, and that's it.
But no, like, this might just be the fact that I had to review Hyperscape, and
yeah,
man,
that
left a bad taste in my mouth. That left a bad taste in my mouth. That game is absolute shit.
Yeah, that's another game that they showed at Ubisoft Forward, which is just getting expansion and no one cares.
And I don't say that lightly. I'm an extremely difficult person to disappoint. So when I tell you something is bad, that means that by most people's standards, it's catastrophic.
Yeah. So it's this game and Lucky's Tale. You hate both of those.
I don't hate Lucky's Tale. I hate...
He just loves Tunic more. Whenever the fuck that's coming out.
I don't hate Lucky's Tale. I haven't had a chance to play it, and I didn't play it because I played...
It's Baby's First Banjo-Kazooie.
Collectathon games are just collectathon games. Yeah, I have no ill will towards them. They just are what they are.
It does have that rare charm. Although I will say the 2D, the Donkey Kong Country version of that game is even better.
And Yooka-Laylee was the one you're thinking of, which I did play, and I made a guide for. And that's the reason I don't like that game.
Oh, okay.
And it's not because I think that game is bad. It's that I had to grind out every last searchable instance in there.
Couldn't you just get a console commands from the developer?
No. Not at that time, I couldn't. But,
So getting back to Immortals Fenyx Rising, I think this is going to be the IP that comes forward for Ubisoft. I think this is their new Far Cry. I think this is going to be the smash hit that they've been waiting for, that Watch Dogs was not.
Right. It feels refreshing, I think, this game. Like I said, it's the opposite of God of War. You're helping out the deities. You're saving higher powers.
You're smacking him in the face, though.
And,
you know, hats off to Ubisoft for taking harpies, which were those griffin-looking creatures, and not strapping tits to them and making them weirdly sexy like every other game maker in the history of games has ever done, looking at Castlevania.
So that's what I'm saying. It's rather refreshing. You know, it's not dark and grim. You have this lively game, and you customize your avatar so you can feel like you're that character because you craft them. So that, you know, that adds in a layer, I think, of fun and agency, maybe. But yeah, it looks good. Oh, yeah. And it's narrated by Zeus and Prometheus, who I guess are kind of having an argument about the story.
Well, I mean, Prometheus stole fire to give to humans, and Zeus did not want him to do that. Oh,
yeah.
Before that, Prometheus had humans trick Zeus, and this is from mythology, in which he told the humans to give him a delicious-looking dish of cow guts and bones that were disgusting, and a lousy-looking dish but all the best cow organs. So Zeus said he would take the good-looking, yucky dish, and the humans were able to keep all the good parts of the cow. And that's what really started. That's what pissed Zeus off at Prometheus in the first place. So I wonder if they're going to bring that up.
Yeah, but we can't bury the lead here. The whole premise of it is that it is in that point where Zeus gave, or where Prometheus gave humans fire, and he's chained up.
Yes, that's why. I mean,
yeah.
And Zeus comes down to have Prometheus tell him a story because he's bored. And when Zeus gets bored with Prometheus's storytelling, he comes up with unique takes on it that appear in your game.
Okay.
So, like, Zeus will get bored and be like, and then suddenly there was a giant one-eyed ogre. And that will be a boss.
I reminded of that, of the, that last South Park game in which they actually started cheating.
Oh, yeah. Fractured Butthole.
Yes.
Jeez. It's like, it's part of the, and, oh, yeah, now I got the laser power or something like that. It was just, okay, Cartman.
it is that, but Zeus and Petty.
Right.
He's allowed to.
Zeus, yes.
So yeah, it looks like a big hit coming out of Ubisoft. And next, a lot of people are happy about Prince of Persia: The Sands of Time getting a remake. I wish they were getting Prince of Persia 2008 was getting a sequel, but you know, I mean, might as well reintroduce people to the original good Prince of Persia, because there was Prince of Persia before Prince of Persia 3D, which sucked ass.
Did you see a lot of people weren't really thrilled about the way that it looked from the trailer? Like, the complaints that I was hearing was that it didn't look better, it just looked different. Like, they took basically did a different artistic style, but they didn't really improve anything.
Yeah, it's fine. As long as the gameplay is the same.
Agreed. I haven't actually played The Sands of Time, so it's something that I'm interested in.
I mean, it has to be the same story, or else why call it The Sands of Time remake?
It's gonna, right. Yeah. So for that part alone, I'm interested in playing it, because it's something that completely slipped under my radar when it came out.
Sure, they improved the quality, because I think this was on PS2, right? Originally?
Mm-hmm. So it was a little PS2, bit. PS2, Xbox.
Right, so it was probably a little bit rough around the edges, the 3D. Still.
Then the next game of the series, they went completely and utterly emo.
Yeah. See, so it's nice.
Everybody hated it. It was better gameplay, but the prince became such an emo. You expected him to be dressed all in black and listening to Rage Against the Machine.
Oh my god. Yeah, so it's, again, nice, refreshing, get back to more lively colors, more, I don't know, just enthusiastic-looking gameplay, I guess.
Speaking of lively colors and enthusiastic, you also have Scott Pilgrim vs. the World 10th Anniversary Remaster, basically, which is a four-player beat-em-up in the classic mold, sort of like Castle Crashers, but based on the comic book. Or is it a webcomic? I forgot. Which one is it? Webcomic or
comic? It's an actual comic book.
Okay.
It's a series of comic books. But I was thrilled to see this. Scott Pilgrim vs. the World is kind of me and my spouse's movie. It was the first movie we saw.
This is the game.
No, I know. But
is
like,
it based on the movie? I forgot.
It is based on the movie and the comics. Okay.
No, I was wondering if it was based on the if it was a movie tie-in.
It was. It came out literally in the same month as the movie.
Yeah, the movie tanked. The game did not.
The movie did not tank. Are you crazy?
It tanked. It tanked in the box office so bad. That's why they stopped making any Scott Pilgrim vs. the World movies.
I'm going to look this up because I think you're lying.
It tanked. It tanked bad.
Googling this.
I remember it tanked bad because people were complaining about how... You know, this is back when movies were trying to get in with geek culture and just didn't work because it wasn't... Anyways, getting back to the game, it doesn't look much different, just sharper. But, you know, I mean, it'll introduce... I mean, the multiplayer is very good, and the gameplay mechanics are very good, too. Because if you're going to make a four-person Castle Crasher-style beat-em-up, you got to give... It's you know, something to make it different.
Yeah, you gotta give it some meat, I think, because I did play Castle Crashers, and I guess I felt bored of it after a while. It just didn't feel like there was any substance for me to keep going.
Castle Crashers
was just
all
like
about the look.
Yeah, I was just fighting enemy after enemy. So at least with Scott Pilgrim, it seems to have more personality. The Castle Crashers was just, I don't know, some knights and your rescuing princesses, and it just was very generic.
All right, I got to step in here. It's based on, like, the game is not based on Castle Crashers. The game is based on River City Ransom.
Oh, that's
okay. Well, it's okay. Let me put it this way: it has the same aesthetic as that.
It also has the same aesthetic as River City Ransom, which it's actually based on.
Okay. No, it's a four player beat 'em up. Come on.
Which River City Ransom was.
Streets of Rage 4. It's not that much different. What are you talking
about? But, like, no, it was a complete homage to River City Ransom and the movies.
By the way,
the comic
book. Actually releasing a vinyl soundtrack, too.
Yeah, because, like, it was the 10th anniversary of both the movie and the game. Which is kind of what got the conversation about the game going after so long, because for those who don't know, Scott Pilgrim vs. the World, the game, kind of just disappeared from every playable instance.
Yeah, I remember. Yeah, wasn't it taken off Xbox Arcade and PSN at one point?
It was on PS3 and Xbox 360's online marketplaces for up until 2004, and then it was taken offline because of licensing issues.
Yeah.
And it's one of the largest cases it's one of the largest cases of people arguing for the preservation of games, because, like, and one of the arguments against digital-only games is that if somebody loses the license to something and then it just disappears from the ethos, everybody's just kind of screwed.
But you know what? Here's the problem. Ubisoft said that the game will be available, quote unquote, to download, meaning the game is once again at the mercy of a digital storefront. There's no mention of a physical release being made.
Yeah, that's unfortunate. I have heard Limited Run Games wants to give it a go, but no word on if that's actually going to happen yet. That said, I love the movie, which is not a flop, by the way.
It's a flop.
It was not a flop.
Why wasn't there a Scott Pilgrim in the versus the World too?
Because they literally tried to stuff the entire comic book series into one movie.
That's not how it happened. It, financially, it bombed. Okay, and you can't. What's it called? You have to include what's it called, advertising and all that stuff. The other thing that they don't know yet is if the 10th anniversary game is going to be cross-platform play.
Yeah, no, I don't know. But they didn't mention online play in it yet, which makes me kind of nervous. I hope they do that, because
you know what the good
that
thing is? Sucks. It's just going to be $15. It's $15.
Actually, I'm looking
the same
for the
price that it was in 2010.
Yes, which is acceptable.
They're releasing it for the same price people paid for it in 2010.
I love that game. I love that movie. That movie is one of the first movies I watched together with my spouse,
okay.
Which the game – we also played through the game together. It has a special place in my heart. It's pretty good. We actually watched it again the other day. Cool. And it holds up. It has a lot of good actors in it as well.
Right. So they also showed off more of Watch Dogs Legion. And it's promising. It's actually made me interested in Watch Dogs, but, you know, burned twice already, so we'll see.
What's that?
Watch Dogs Legion is looking far more interesting than the other two did.
Yeah, I mean, here's the thing. The two protagonists of Watch Dogs 1 and 2 were just... I had no... None of the characters were likable.
What's that, Jonah? You say you loved the first Watch Dogs protagonist so much that you wanted him back in Watch Dogs Legion? Because have I got news for you.
Oh, no.
Here's the thing.
I thought it was a new guy.
No.
He's
here's
coming
the thing.
Back.
The entire point of Watch Dogs Legion is that you're part of a underground group and you recruit from everybody. You can recruit old ladies, you recruit construction workers and all that stuff. So I wouldn't be surprised if you could release that ass hat and a cap.
Even better, Jonah, he's going to get his own story and mission in DLC that will launch soon after the release of Watch Dogs Legion, so that you can experience his story through the eyes of...
It's like Dead Rising, I think it was 2, in which one of the DLCs was you could play as Frank West.
It's exactly like that, but it's Watch Dogs Legion.
But here's the difference. When they put Frank West into... Dead Rising 2, they made it so that you played the entire game as Frank West. No one wants to play the entire game as Adrian. No one.
But you'll be able to if you want to once you finish his story mission in the DLC and he becomes part of your Legion.
I just want to recruit a granny to infiltrate. I want to see how that works. Because you can recruit anybody. And every single person has their own, you know, skill set and personality. And also... you can modify that, too, depending on what their general role is. Some of them also have unique weapons that only they can have, that sort of thing.
Mm-hmm.
But you can have Granny climbing up a ladder. The problem is that they're not very good at physical things. You want them to do stuff that they're able to do. So I want to recruit the 80-year-old woman and see what her special powers are. Maybe she's able to distract guards by having look at pictures of her cats.
Yeah, I remember, like, there's the special agent Granny. I don't know if there's multiple Grannies.
There's many characters in it. And it's not, from what I understand, it's not even procedurally generated. I mean, there is to an extent, but what I mean is that they're crafted characters.
Does this take place in England?
It takes place in a dystopian England.
Yes.
I thought that was an interesting one. I saw the trailer, and they were talking about... they came for me and I didn't speak up because and all that stuff. And then at the end, he gets a mask in the mirror.
Think of the Vendetta. Vendetta, basically.
It definitely had that feel.
Yeah. Except I think it's going to have a bit of dry British wit to it as well.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Which is always fun. Yeah.
So, yeah, I mean, I'm liking what I'm seeing from it. It's a rent to buy for me. We'll see. And finally, we have Riders Republic. And that's something we haven't had in a long while, and that's an extreme sports game. And this one isn't going to do it all. It's going to do snowboarding. It's going to do mountain biking. It's going to do, you know, all the extreme sports.
This looked fun. I am open to anyone who takes a sort of battle royale style and applies it to an all new different type of formula.
Says the person playing Tony Hawk 1 and 2 right now.
What does that have to do with battle royale?
No, it has to do with extreme sports.
Oh, yeah. Well, like I said, like I speaking on the specifically the Battle Royale front, I enjoy anyone who takes that formula and applies it to something that is not just shooting other people on an island. And this is not a Battle Royale, but it kind of looks like it could be in a way. In the same way Fall Guys might be considered
a
battle royale.
It's massively multiplayer.
So you have like hundreds of players just like on different on different means of transportation flying down a hill, careening off the environment and each other, and ragdoll physics galore, which is just delightful.
You know, that's I'm going to say something. You know what people have really wanted and we haven't seen yet, and that's a snowboarding game. Not since SSX.
Yes.
So, I mean, you can bike, you can snowboard, you can ski, and you can have a flying wingsuit.
Yes. It looks like a lot of people were thinking this was going to be a – what was it? There's another Ubisoft game that has, like, the biking element to it.
Oh, yeah.
BMX something?
No, Trials.
Okay.
Yeah. And so a lot of people were thinking that it was going to be something like Trials, but it looks – I mean, I'm interested to see more. It looks fun.
This is what would happen if SSX had continued going on. And they said, screw it, let's just build a mountain and have 100 people going at once.
Yeah, why not? It looked, the trailer was frenetic enough that I at least want to see what comes next.
Yeah. I mean, look, in another way, this game reminds me of the current hot game, you know, Fall Guys. It has that vibe, too.
Mm-hmm.
In which it's just pure chaos with hundreds of people and just say, screw it. You make your own fun. Yeah, from A to B, go.
Yes. And I'm all to see more of that. It looks like it could be a fun time.
Yeah. Anyways, was there anything else from Ubisoft Forward that you want to talk about? Aside
kinda,
from completely deriding that game.
Kind of weird that Yves Guillemot took...
Kind of...
What's up?
Très français, Yves Guillemot.
Oh. Either way, kind of weird that he did that sort of address well before and disconnected from Ubisoft Forward.
Oh, well, we also have to remember that there's been a lot of shit going on with Ubisoft about Me Too and sexual harassment.
Yes, and they've been firing a lot of people. They also supremely fucked up by doing a ad for one of their games in which they used Black Lives Matter imagery to portray a terrorist organization.
Yeah, and it's basically they just want to do a black, you know, a fist going up, but maybe they should have colored it purple or red or some other color.
They shouldn't have made it look exactly like the BLM fist. Yeah. And they caught it for that. So even Ubisoft has kind of tripped over themselves over and over and over and over and over again through 2020. And I know that this was his way of trying to address that and like try to be like, we understand what we've done wrong and we're trying to do better. But it was weird that they decided to do it like 2 hours before the Ubisoft Forward presentation. And then a little bit later, they were like, when everybody was like, why didn't you put this at the start of the Ubisoft Forward presentation? They were like, editing is hard.
It's not editing, it's timing.
Yeah, basically all they would have had to do was like take it and splice it onto the beginning of the presentation they already planned. But instead they said, we hear you, and we didn't have time to do that, so we're just going to put it in videos on demand afterwards when we put the clip when we upload the whole video. It's not that hard, Ubisoft. It really isn't.
But I will say this, you know, this is the most promising Ubisoft presentation I've seen in a long while in terms of interest in the games that they're putting out.
Yes, I will agree with that. I was really happy to see Scott Pilgrim vs. the World. Immortals Phoenix Rising looks fun.
Looks fresh. I mean,
yes. And Riders Republic looks good.
I'm still, you know, keeping an eye on Watch Dogs Legion. I'm hoping it's what I want. And here's the problem with Ubisoft. Sometimes they promise too much. And the finished product is just in comparison to what they promised.
Yeah.
Like Watch Dogs. I mean, you know, those gameplay videos for Watch Dogs, like a year or two before the game was released, were like, oh man, this is so cool. And when you actually play it, it's like, oh.
Yeah.
Anyways, we're going to move on to the next item. Go ahead, Scott.
Okay. Bungie emphatically denies Microsoft buyout rumor. This is from PC Gamer. Bungie has flatly denied reports that it was in talks with Microsoft about a buyout that ultimately fell through because the studio's asking price was too high. The rumor first emerged in a recent GamesBeat podcast during which two members of the team say they've heard about talks between the two, but that it hasn't come to fruition because of high cost. Eurogamer bolstered the report by reporting that it had heard the same rumors independently. Bungie CEO Pete Parsons was blunt in his response, however, this is false. It's not clear which part of the report Parsons took issue with, that the talks had fallen through because of price or that they had ever taken place at all. But the studio issued a more across-the-board denial in a follow-up statement. All of the info and speculation out there is not true, a Bungie rep said. We are lucky to have a great relationship with our many friends over there who play Destiny and the Halo. We'll always have a special place in our hearts. Jeff Grubb of VentureBeat, who initially mentioned the rumor, later said on Twitter that the remark wasn't intended to mean that formal movement toward a buyout was underway, noting that acquisition talks are always happening all the time for all kinds of stuff.
In other words, he made it up. But I will say this, you know, it makes a lot of sense, considering Microsoft's recent actions, for them to rebuy Bungie. Because, let's face it, 343 Industries has not had a good rep lately.
Yeah, I mean, would I want to see Bungie back in the seat on Halo? Sure. Do I think it would ever happen? No, because they have Destiny 2 now and that prints money.
Who knows, but it could also print money for Microsoft. Especially, you know, here's the thing. Microsoft might want them as a second-party developer. Which is rare, but it still happens.
Yeah, I don't know. Like, I can't see Bungie strapping in with Microsoft because I think they just do too dang well on their own at this point. And furthermore, like, I feel like the reason why Bungie emphatically, like, came out and said, no, get out of our face, we didn't say that, is because of the sour relationship they had with Activision. I wouldn't be surprised at all if the people at Bungie are like, no, we're not fucking owned by a bigger company.
Well, here's the thing, you know, they did not have a sour relationship with Microsoft, though. You know, Microsoft said, okay, you can go. They said, we want to do something other than Halo. And says, okay, well, I'll tell you what. The people on your team who still want to do Halo, let them work for us, and then we'll let you go and do whatever you want, you know. And there was always that unspoken thing in which, you know, if you can't do anything, we'll take you back. I don't think they want to do Halo anymore.
Yeah. I mean, they found their thing. And, like, love it or hate it, Destiny 2 is not showing any sign of going away anytime soon. No.
Well, they put too much work into it. It's basically a sunken ship fallacy. And if they can, and now that they're apart from Activision, they can make the game they want to make. I don't know if they're ever going to make a Destiny 3. I think they may just iterate on Destiny 2 over and over and over again.
Yeah, I mean, they have that expansion Beyond Light coming, like, literally this November. So.
I will say, though, if they are working on a Destiny 3, they'd probably work on it for 5 or 6 or 7 or 8 years. So that's the game that they want, you know, and not the way the way Destiny got off was on completely the wrong foot. And if they're going to make another Destiny, it's going to be completely their game from the ground up, so you don't have the same bullshit that was hanging around the neck of the first Destiny, and consequently was hanging around the neck of the second Destiny.
Yeah, I just don't think that you see that we see Bungie going back to working for anyone else but themselves anytime soon.
But, you know, you never know. I mean, if Bungie reaches a bump, Microsoft might be there. I mean, that's why Microsoft owns Double Fine. That's why Microsoft owns In Exile, and that's why Microsoft owns Obsidian. Because they all ran into money problems with Microsoft said, hey, here's some money.
They also
the game you're working on right now, you can do multi-platform, but the games that you're working for us, you know what? We'll let you do whatever the fuck you want. It's going to be on PC and the console. And, you know.
I, I have seen the viewership on the websites I worked whenever we write Destiny content, and if it's to be believed, Bungie is not running into money problems anytime soon.
Well, here's the thing. Those are people who are already playing. You need people who are going to, what's it called, new players very often. Although,
well,
I
that's
mean,
what they're doing
release,
with...
Yeah, if you release DLC packs on a regular basis, you don't need to do that. You can just keep people you already have entertained.
Well, and also they're not only doing Beyond Light, that's going to be the big new expansion coming this season, but they're also doing New Light, which is the free-to-play version. So, arguably, they're going both directions.
I just want to make a remake of Oni, damn it. Make a remake of Oni.
That's never going to happen. As long as they can take Destiny and print money on it, they will continue to make Destiny until Destiny can't print money no more. And the only thing that would keep Destiny at this point from not printing money is a complete government and societal collapse in which money didn't matter anymore.
Or at least video games didn't matter.
Right. That's as far as like I can tell, in any case, in my professional opinion.
Yep. So we're going to move on to the next item, and I'm going to do it so you don't have to deal with that name. Former Witcher 3 developers are launching a sci-fi novel-inspired game, and this comes from some PC Games N. Some of the developers behind Witcher 3, Dying Light, Dead Island, and Cyberpunk 2077 have come together to start up a new studio called Starward Industries. Its first outing is a sci-fi game with Adam Punk aesthetics that is inspired by the works of Stanislaw Lem, a prominent novelist who worked within the same genre. For those who don't know, Stanislaw Lem is probably best known for Solaris, along with some other science fiction classics. But Solaris is the number one movie he's known for. It's called The Invincible, and it's set in a world where technology has advanced to the point of seamless space exploration, but equipment remains analog as the digital revolution has not taken place, nor has the Cold War ended. The game's been in the works since 2018, and the devs hope to have it out next year. Lead dev Marek Markejuk says that the atmosphere draws comparisons to the gameplay of Alien Isolation, whereas communicating through radio comms will put you in mind of Firewatch, and it'll use the Unreal 4 engine. So there was another game called Surviving Mars, I think it was. There was a which this game looks like, but it looks like it's taking a different tack and a different feel. What's interesting is they never said anything about Lovecraftian, even though it feels Lovecraftian in certain ways, just from the screenshots and the music.
Yes. Yeah,
but I have a feeling it's not going to be, because if they're doing with Stanislaw Lem, they're doing a completely other kind of science fiction.
Yeah, I listened to that music that you posted. They've posted some soundtrack work from this game. It makes me think of a whole bunch of different things. Like, it makes me think of Blade Runner. It makes me think of Dune. It makes me think of Tron. I really dig that style.
But I also noticed in some of the screenshots he's holding up a map which says, oh, there's the Firewatch part of this.
I really like the concept that it's just a mysterious mission to find your missing crew, and I just feel like there's a lot of mystery, and I like those kind of games. And
but it's not
going to
be a walking simulator. If they're saying it's going to be like Alien Isolation, then you're dealing with a more System Shock type of game.
Mm-hmm. I'm all for more games that are like that, because arguably, like, these guys are – if these guys worked on Witcher 3, I have to believe that they have some semblance of an idea on how to tell a story.
Yeah. Here's the thing. Usually I would say okay, because, you know, we've had indie play from developers who worked on Halo and all that stuff and comes out with the public. You know, they've been working on this game since 2018, which means it's now in its second year of development and it's going on its third. So it should be the only thing I'm worried about is that it might be that game. Oh, damn. What was the name of that game where you're on Mars with lightning powers? Something Mancer.
Technomancer?
Technomancer, yeah. I'm worried it's going to be another Technomancer. That's the only thing I'm worried about.
Yeah, it could. But, like, I don't know. We'll see. We'll have to see. this is one of the first times we've heard of this game. Like, this is the first one of the first times they've come out and really showed a lot of stuff on it, right?
Yeah, this is their debut. This is them lifting the kimono.
So I reserve judgment until we see more of this game in actual action. I like the screenshots. I like the music. You have my attention. But yeah, I agree with you. We'll need to see more before I would say anything else about it.
Like I said, it has a long development time, which makes me feel better about it. You know, it has a 3-year development time. Normal development time is like, what, 18 months for a good game? You know, for a AA or AAA game. So this isn't something that a bunch of guys are getting together and just shitting something out. You know? This is actually I expect something on the level, maybe above the level of Grounded, which is still being worked on.
Cool to see that they've been studying Alien Isolation, because that is a mastercraft and like lonely atmospheric gameplay. I have nothing but praise for Alien Isolation and the way it was designed, and that's a good thing to reference, I think.
The only problem I have with Alien Isolation is that it's too slow. I mean, System Shock 2 had the perfect pace.
Yeah. Well, I mean, it's at the mercy of the fact that the enemies are all, like, random in their behaviors.
Yeah, and so, the enemies are nothing like the robots from System Shock 2 at all. Nothing like them.
Uh-huh. So they could either be, like, super ultra-aggressive and come at you at all times, or, like, completely ignore you, which leaves things slow and boring for a while.
Yeah. It's basically System Shock meets Resident Evil 3.
Uh-huh.
By that, I mean it's like it's basically you and Nemesis.
Well, there's a game. There is a screenshot of what looks to be some sort of robot shooting a laser, and I guess the character has fallen down backwards. So there's definitely enemies, or at least
there's going to be threats. Enemies, yeah, I mean, yeah, they said it was going to be like Alien Isolation, which tells me it's going to be thoughtful, tactical combat, in which you have to make sure that you have the best, you have the upper hand, basically. You can't just run in blind shooting.
Make very careful decisions about what you do next and how you use your resources.
Yeah, because...
Yeah, I think it does sound like there might actually be aliens. We just don't know what they look like yet, unless it's robots.
Well, there'll be robots.
Yeah.
You can always have robots in a
sci-fi fiction film. Of course.
Like I said, I like the setting. I like the music. I like what they're going for. It'll be interesting to see if they manage to pull it through. This sort of reminds me of the last time someone did this since Metro 2033. When that last time you had someone taking a Russian novel and turning it into... By the way, this is based on a Russian book. So it also is a licensed game, too.
So this will be the second game that makes Starfall look bad.
Anyways.
I will say this. Like, if a good lead-up to this is going to be – I don't know if you guys saw, but today they put out a release trailer – or a release date trailer for Amnesia Rebirth.
Yes, they did.
That one is looking great.
Well, it's by the Chinese Room, no?
It's by Frictional Games.
Oh, Frictional. I'm sorry. The Chinese Room collaborated with Frictional on the second Amnesia game.
Mm-hmm. Frictional is handling a full new Amnesia game, which I'm really happy to see. It's looking like it's going to be more of what we know about Amnesia, which is going to be atmospheric horror, very careful use of resources, and very psychedelic horror.
Very pants-wetting horror, yes.
It looks good. I've seen both trailers, the one they put out in March and then the one that came out today, and like, I'm ready for that game. And it's not too far away.
That reminds me of the short that Electronic Arts released for Star Wars Squadrons called Hunted. Did you see that?
Oh yeah, that's the one about the protagonist, right?
No, well, it's about one of the it's about the rebel. I mean, the Imperial protagonist.
Mm-hmm.
It's a 7-minute long video, and every time I see these videos, I think, why can't the fucking movies be this good? Seriously, I mean, You have a single vision with these videos, while these movies are made by committee.
Yeah.
You have to have a Skywalker. You have to have lightsabers. You have to have, you know, this one doesn't have any of that. It has a it has two spaceships and a dogfight. That's it.
Yeah. I understand they have a really, really, really good writing team on the Star Wars games at EA, though.
Yeah.
Like, since Battlefront 2.
For my site, GameStooch.
Yeah, like, since Battlefront 2, they've had a lot of good people working on that game's narratives. Or that franchise's narratives, I should say.
This one looks better. And it managed to make the Rebel Alliance look like the bad guys.
Which is what you want if you're going to be playing as the Imperials.
And here's the thing. It also has... What?
Scott? I was going to say, speaking of Star Wars and... Yes, I'm here.
No, but go
speaking
ahead.
Of Star Wars, did you see the expansion for Sims 4 they're doing?
Oh, yeah. Yes, that, yeah. That is goofy as hell.
I have bad news, guys.
Yeah.
I have some bad news about that expansion.
Oh, what's the bad news?
It's extremely tacked on and shitty, according to my colleagues.
Wow. Well,
that's how's that different from any other Sims 4 expansion? Come on. That is The Sims, tacked on and shitty. They're all like that. What are you talking about? I mean...
So our guy that reviewed it loves The Sims 4. He's played it since the beginning. He's played through each of the expansions. He loves those games. He would be the first to say if it was good. He said it was just like it. There have been Sims 4 expansions that felt fleshed out and felt like they were full experiences, and this was not one of them. This felt like this one felt like a cash grab. They give you like full set pieces, like full Millennium Falcons that you can like visit. But you can't go inside of them. You can just click on them, and it gives you a blurb about them, which is like, how the heck are you going to put a whole Millennium Falcon in your game and not let me go inside?
That's terrible. Yes, I agree. It's like a rabbit hole.
I'm waiting to see what they do with Jurassic Park World in Minecraft.
Well, in Minecraft, you always get to go in everything. So, somebody's...
I just can't wait to see people recreating scenes from the movies with them.
Oh, yeah.
So that was just me trying to tell you,
I don't have The Sims 4. Oh, that's right. One of the biggest news, although it's not exactly something that was – it was rumored about, but they finally confirmed it. But, yeah, EA Access is officially going to be a part of Xbox Game Pass, which is huge.
Yes.
And here's the thing. I haven't played any of the Unraveled games, so this will be a great chance for me to play them.
Yeah, and I mean, like, from what I understand, EA, like, the All Access program actually costs – we did the math on this, and it actually costs less to do the All Access program on one of the Xboxes than it does to just buy the system outright and and Xbox Game Pass Ultimate. Yeah. Like, the amount of things that's included in that package would normally come out to – we worked it out to about $867 for the Xbox Series X and then $500-something dollars for the Xbox Series S. And it actually turns out that if you do the financing thing, if you go along with that, adding in the cost of the Xbox Game Pass Ultimate and all the other stuff, you end up paying less in the end than you would pay if you bought the Xbox outright and then also bought 2 years of Xbox Game Pass.
Yeah. On a side note, xCloud launches today, and they also announced that Minecraft Dungeons, they have a special touchscreen version of that. Because I think Microsoft understands, you know, not everybody's going to have a Bluetooth controller, so let's give them at least one thing that they can just play with on their screen.
That makes sense. Sounds good.
Yeah, I'm happy to see the xCloud finally launched. It's a great little thing.
Yeah. So I'm gonna have to get the Razer Kishi to make my cell phone look like a Nintendo Switch.
Yeah, worthy investment at this point.
Yeah. Anyways, there's some. Oh yeah, I almost forgot. Also, the PlayStation 5 reveal is either this week. Has it happened yet?
It's literally tomorrow at 10 a.m. Pacific.
Right. So hopefully we'll find out what the price is so that those poor people who are in the raffle know how much they're going to have to give up for it.
God, I hope they show us. That would be so stupid if they went through that whole thing and maybe showed a couple games and then were like,
$500.
Have we told you how cool the DualSense controller is? All right, that's it. Goodbye.
Shit, a few years ago, I said, no, just have dual access.
I don't know.
It's probably going to be $500.
They've spent more time on talking up that controller than they've spent on any other detail about the PS5.
It's going to be $500. I mean, I don't think they're going to go any lower than that because that thing's expensive to make. And Sony, unlike Microsoft, doesn't have any other businesses it can draw from. Because here's a dirty little secret about Sony. Their video game division is the only division that's making money aside from their loaning division. Mm-hmm. I think it's the loaning division.
Don't they sell TVs and
music
stuff? Yeah,
they're not making money on them.
Wow.
Their electronics division is not good. The PlayStation and I think it's their bank loans division are the two divisions that are making money for them.
Sony TVs are kind of stupid expensive, and there are other TV brands that do the same thing that they do, but for cheaper.
Yeah, I buy Samsung.
Same.
I mean, we'll see. Like I said, I don't think it's going to be under or over $500. I think it's going to be $500. If it's anything more, they're spitting the bit.
Yeah.
And if they dare price it lower, they're really breaking their own arm. And the fact that Microsoft came out with a $300 SKU, and we should talk that there's a lot of grumbling that the Microsoft Series S is going to just play the Xbox. When you play the backwards compatible stuff, it's not going to be Xbox One X version that's going to play. It's going to be the Xbox Series X, the Xbox One S versions of those games upscaled. So there's a lot of questions of how long can are the Xbox Series S's going to be good for before they're not good enough to play the game. And I think the answer is it's going to play everything the Xbox Series X can. And I don't think the people who are going to be buying the $300 model are going to be all that concerned with graphics. They're looking for a less expensive version that they can give their kids. And at some point, if they want to get the Xbox Series S, they just trade it in and, you know, get a better one. So we'll see. There's been grumbling about that. But still, it's a $300 model. And did Sony ever confirm that they were doing their own discless version of the PS5?
Yes, they have.
Okay. So they'll have that too.
I can imagine that can be that. I don't see that being any less than $450.
What, the mainline PlayStation 5?
No, the discless one.
Oh, God. Any less than $450?
Yeah.
Oh, God. That's bad. You gotta – if they do that, Microsoft really cut them off at the knees with the $300 model. Because here's the thing. Nintendo's proved it. People don't care so much about graphics and power as they do price. If you put out the cheaper console, people are going to buy the cheaper console.
Agreed. And I mean, like, here's the reason why I think it's going to be $450 is that the only difference between the PS5
had no disc drive, yeah.
Yeah, that's the only difference between the two. As far as I can tell, Xbox Series S isn't going to suffer tremendously on performance, but it does have some different components.
Yeah, and the thing is that its main thing is that it's going to be a less expensive console that you can still play the Xbox Series X games with.
Yeah.
And if, you know, I have a feeling that people who buy the $300 console aren't going to have 4K TVs. Even though they'll be able to play 4K, I'm just saying, they're not going to care. They'll have a 1080p TV and it'll look just fine on their 1080p TV. Well, I will say, you know, 4K TVs are crashing in price. So.
Yeah, we'll see what happens. We're going to learn tomorrow, so.
I want to be rich so that I can buy that 8K TV and show it off and say, yeah, I got 8K, baby.
Okay.
They actually have started releasing 8K videos. Have you seen them on YouTube?
If you don't have an 8K TV, how are you going to tell?
Well, if you, I have a 4K monitor. It looks fantastic on my 4K monitor.
Pretty sure I...
No, but 8K content is slowly leaking out there. I'd say in like 5 years, 8K will start becoming the new standard. And after that, you know, there's not really much more you can do because 8K is basically the human eye. The human eye views things in 8K. Anyway, look for our show notes at GamingPodcast.net, along with industry news and our gaming history articles. We enjoy your feedback, so leave us comments on our blog at GamingPodcast.net. Also, hit us up at Facebook.com/GamingPodcast. Subscribe to us on iTunes. Leave some iTunes comments. You can find me on Twitter at Jonah Falcon.
You can find me at Giant Chugs.
You can find me at Alpha Shark.
And next week we will be talking about the PS5, whatever comes of that demonstration.
Yep-a-roo. I have my fingers crossed that we finally get a price.
Although I'm still happy that MLB The Show is going to be cross-platform. That's all I care about.
Yeah.
I remember that there was a Twitter exchange, I think, 2 years ago, in which someone asked them, hey, they asked Sony Santa Monica, hey, is there ever going to – is it Sony Santa Monica or Sony San Diego? Who's the one who works on MLB The Show? Anyways, it's the developer. They asked the developer, are you ever going to have an Xbox version coming out? It says, nope. We're on PlayStation only. I wonder what the development team is thinking now. we're making this game on the Switch and the Xbox? I wonder if Sony said, you know, this is a good way to look at the Xbox Series X architecture because our development team is going to be working on a game for it.
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, you know, you have Cuphead on PS4. What else can you ask for?
Not much. Cuphead on Netflix.
I could ask for Suikoden 5 on PS4.
That would also be good.
I'm not going to get it, but I can ask for it.
So, yeah. By the way, obviously the that game hit its Kickstarter, and it's finally out of Kickstarter and getting developed. And you did back it, right, Scott?
Yes, I did.
Okay.
I backed Ayudin Chronicles.
Yeah. So when did they say it was coming out?
They estimate about two and a half years. Yeah. Okay. That's their estimate at least. That, you know, but with a lot of Kickstarters sometimes it gets pushed back. I know.
I don't think that's gonna happen with this game.
Hopefully
it
not.
It looks like they already have been working on it for a while.
Mm-hmm. They have been, and they have good backing. They have a good plan, a structured. Their Kickstarter campaign was very well structured, and they met all
just
of their.
That. It's that I think they have the game mechanics, and they have basically they have the tools, and they have the gameplay mechanics, and all that's left is just building the world.
Yeah, just making the content.
Anyways, we will see you next week.
Happy gaming, everyone.
Have fun, be cool, play games, y'all.